You're listening to KNKX. A recent spat between Seattle's mayor and city council has once again brought attention to the city's so-called soda tax. There was a conflict over how to use the money generated from the tax because the revenues blew past initial projections. This has prompted questions about whether the tax is actually succeeding in getting fewer people to drink soda. KNKX reporter Simone Alisea has been following this, and she wanted to see what it's like to buy soda now.
I decided to do a very unscientific poll of some businesses near Seattle Center. First, I head to a nearby 7-Eleven.
I'm heading to the back where the drinks are, and I'm just looking at the prices here, and I'm not seeing anything that says that they're is an increased price. I'm looking at Pepsi right now and it says $2.99 plus tax.
Pepsi and the Cherry Coke I end up actually buying are definitely subject to the sugary beverage tax. But there's nothing at this particular 7-Eleven that says I'm paying more. I even went back to check if the regular soda was the same price as the diet soda, which is not taxed.
So yeah, all these are exactly the same, $2.99.
So then I decide to get a 20-ounce drink from the McDonald's drive-thru down the street.
Hello, how can I help you today?
Hi, do you have Sunkist?
They don't. I get a Coke instead.
Okay, so I can see on the screen that there's a beverage surcharge for that, just like 35 cents.
So sometimes it's clear just how much more you're paying because of the tax, but sometimes it isn't. And even almost 2 years in, there's still some confusion over what's considered a sugary beverage. Take kombucha. That's the trendy fermented tea drink that's supposed to have some health benefits. I'm standing in front of a bunch of bottles at Metropolitan Market where they put labels on the price tag and break it out on your receipt.
But what I'm confused about right now is I'm looking at this wall of kombucha and some of the kombuchas do say that the sugary beverage tax will be applied, but some of them don't.
I buy a 14-ounce bottle that is subject to the tax. My receipt says I paid an extra 25 cents. When you calculate it per ounce, it's almost exactly the same as what I paid for that Coke at McDonald's.
But that Coke has about 5 times more sugar than the kombucha. After her sugary tour, Simone sat down with KNKX Morning Edition host Kirsten Kendrick to explain what consumers are seeing.
Simone, the rate on the Coke and kombucha were the same? Doesn't Coke have a lot more sugar?
Yeah, but the tax isn't actually based on how much sugar a drink has, just whether sugar was added, and then it's calculated by fluid ounce.
Can you explain a little more about how this tax works? Why do consumers end up seeing different things?
So I think the really important thing to remember is that the tax is on distributors. Distributors are the people who pay the city. But the way the chain is distributors give drinks to retailers. Retailers give them to us, the customers. And ultimately, it's up to the retailers to decide how to price those things.
And what about the kinds of drinks that are taxed?
So it's anything with added sugar. The big exceptions are 100% fruit juice, milk drinks, and alcoholic drinks. But there are still some places that I think are confusing for people. So like coffee drinks that are not primarily milk if they have syrup in them, and kombucha, where sugar is sort of a critical ingredient, a lot of them are taxed, but some of them don't have enough calories to be taxed. Again, not grams of sugar, but just calories.
I could see how this can be a source of confusion. What do we know about how much of the tax is being passed on to consumers?
So there's a team from the University of Washington that's sort of been tasked with looking at all things soda tax. They put out their first report earlier this year that looks at exactly this question, the cost pass through. And what they found is that pretty much all of the tax is being passed on to consumers, again, through that distributor, retailer, consumer.
So the tax has been in place for nearly 2 years, and we're talking about it again because there's been disagreement over how to use the revenue generated from it. How much money are we talking about here?
The sugary beverage tax raised $23 million in 2018, which is the only full year we have for that. So this is a subject of debate because that $23 million blows way past initial projections for how much this tax was going to raise. We're talking like $7 million
more. Wow.
So the mayor last year tried to use it to kind of shore up the general budget, and the council has been adamant that it's used for healthy eating programs and programs to benefit kids. So you had this fight last year over the budget. The council passed a law this year. The mayor vetoed it. The council overrode that veto. And now they have a specific fund for these programs like delivering fresh produce to schools, making it easier to shop at farmers markets with food stamps, things like that.
So do the high revenues indicate more people are drinking soda?
Not according to Jim Krieger. So Jim Krieger wears a lot of hats. He is a researcher at UW Medicine, executive director of Healthy Food America, and he's co-chair of the board that oversees the sugary beverage tax. He says the revenue doesn't really tell us much of anything because our initial estimates were so far off to begin with. I think the other thing that's worth clarifying is that revenue is not increasing. I got quarterly numbers from the city, and the first two quarters of 2018 are really close to the same time period this year.
So shouldn't the goal be to phase out the tax entirely if few enough people are drinking soda?
Yeah. So what we've seen in other cities that have enacted similar taxes, so Philadelphia, Berkeley, is they had a decrease in soda sales, but then it kind of levels off at a lower rate. But people are still buying soda, right? So I asked Krieger, why should we think that sales and consumption should decline further?
Because I think overall, the longer term trends across the country, regardless of taxes, are that sales of sugary drinks are declining somewhat.
So basically he's saying, right, it's not just the tax, but it's also kind of about a cultural shift, right, that makes healthy choices more common, which also speaks to, again, how that revenue is spent on those kind of healthy programs.
So can we tell if the tax is working and having fewer people drinking soda?
The short answer is we really have no idea. The UW team that I mentioned earlier is looking at sales data. That report is due out in a few months. Until that comes out, we won't really have a reliable way of saying what pre-tax consumption was like and what post-tax consumption is like. One thing I will say, though, is that right when I went out and bought all that soda that day, I brought it for our coworkers to drink, and I was talking to Morning Edition producer Ariel Van Cleve about the Sunkist that I got her and the fact that it had 73 grams of sugar.
Man, I would never buy this. Like $2.44 for 145% of your daily value of sugar. Now I'm afraid to drink it.
So, right, I think that's the kind of logic that people like Krieger and supporters of this tax are hoping people will kind of go through as they decide what to drink.
All right, Simone, thanks for breaking this all down.
All right, thanks, Kirsten.
KNKX reporter Simone Alisea speaking with Morning Edition host Kirsten Kendrick about Seattle's soda tax.